What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Championship Sportscast. My name is John Thomas, and joining me here in the magical land of Montana is Kempson Cross. And joining us over Skype from the land of the sunset, California, is Brandon Lee. How's it going, guys?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. Good to be here in Studio 356. The week's gone fast, really pretty fast for me, and also just the semester, really, here at U of M, but hopefully my new gig as the Grizz softball announcer actually gets kicked off or gets the first pitch flies when it's scheduled to. We're supposed to find that out later today whether that's actually going to happen. Holding out hope that that's going to happen, but
poor Carol.
Yeah, my week's been pretty good. Been pretty fast, but pretty good. How about you, Brandon?
Mine's been pretty good. I've been having a tough time sleeping lately. Just been wide awake wondering how Jeremy Clarkson is still alive.
As in Top Gear Jeremy Clarkson?
Yeah, because he walked out of Chernobyl and he had rocks thrown at him by a bunch of angry protesters.
Interesting. I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know. But, so let's get on into our first segment of the week here before we get into kind of our, a little bit of a lighter news week, I would say, into Play of the Week. Gamson, you're up first.
Oh, I am? All right. Well, there was an Ohio State basketball player, and this individual, his name was Sam Thompson, forward for Ohio State. And in a game against Penn State, I believe it was either last night or the night before. No, it was last night. He his wingspan was on full display as he intercepted an inbound pass, but without really fully possessing it, scored a basket. So that looks as pretty much as amazing as it sounds. Like, it's
Samson, I'm gonna start a new hashtag here, and I'm gonna call that straight up skill.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, there was a little bit of luck involved too, I think, but. Yeah, it's as the guy said on the actual broadcast, that shows the value of having someone with that much length at point on your full court press, because that's obviously how this happened. It was a full court press situation. It was pretty impressive.
Brandon, you're up. What's your play of the week? Play of the week.
My play of the week is Jared Jack hitting a game winner over his former team, the Golden State Warriors, at his home arena in Barclays Center.
It was cool.
It was pretty cool. It wasn't a really spectacular play. It's just like the weight behind the play itself was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. And handed Golden State its 12th loss of the year.
Sounds similar to the play that I was going to have be my play of the week if Georgia did pull off the upset of Kentucky on Tuesday night, where J.J. Frazier made a three from the scorer's table to put Georgia up by, I think it was seven, about several points at the time, and it looked like Georgia was going to pull a big upset off on senior night, but the Dogs didn't manage to close it out, and Kentucky remains undefeated, which we'll get to later.
Yeah. So moving on to my play of the week. We go to look at the king of doing crazy stuff. This very special LeBron James play.
Which King James was it?
LeBron.
The only King James.
The only King James. I'm sorry, James Harden's only good because he... Like, James Harden, there's an interesting quote on ESPN today, just while we're on this subject, that was, James Harden is good because he relies on the refs and relies on other people instead of himself to make himself good. Because really, because that's what he does, though. He drives in and tries to get fouled.
Them fighting words, though, there.
No, it goes to the free throw line, but they absolutely have a point, though, because about the time the refs stop calling fouls on you, you're in trouble. And it's absolutely true. Hmm. And there is only one King James, though, and that's LeBron, because LeBron is a far and away probably the best basketball player in the NBA. The stuff he does athletically and just the things he does on the court are absolutely incredible. Like this play where he did against the Celtics earlier in the week. Yes, I know they were blowing out the Celtics. I know. I'm sorry to any Celtics fans out there. But he got a steal and a fast break, Avery Bradley gets in front of him and he behind the back dribbles around him, takes two steps and just slams it home. And it's absolutely impressive. And it looks super cool. I was in shock the first time I saw it. It was pretty, pretty impressive.
As a Lakers fan to a Celtics fan, JT is sorry to all you Boston Celtics fans.
Well, they both stink this year.
I mean, I think and this is how I feel about both. Well, I don't know about Celtics. Celtics could be pretty bad, but I think the Lakers are deceptively bad in the sense that I think they're a lot better than they seem to appear. Because in particular, if you look, the Lakers games, they're either really close or they're leading, it seems like. Mm. Going into halftime, and then it's just like this monumental collapse happens every game, and it's weird, but it's because they're tanking. But that's a discussion for another time. I think it's time we move away from play of the week and into our first segment of the news this week, which is in the National Football League. We had some blockbuster, or well, not some, how about one blockbuster league-shaking trade that happened this week with LeSean McCoy almost out of the blue being traded to the Bills for Kiko Alonso. Thoughts?
Kiko Alonso, linebacker who was a stud before going down with a knee injury last year, was a prime candidate for Defensive Rookie of the Year and such. But the cap hit that McCoy is going to have on for the Bills now is substantial, especially when compared to Kiko Alonso. But it's not all about money, really. I mean, McCoy is apparently not the running back that Chip Kelly decided that he needed in his offense, or I guess. I mean, this trade really blindsided me, and I don't think I was the only one. But it kind of took me off guard. And then of course there's now all the jokesters coming out of the woodwork that are like, you know, now they're going to be the Philadelphia Ducks sooner than later.
Yeah. I was right along with Kempson there with, a little bit of genuine surprise. Both teams fill a void, and now the Eagles have a new void that they have to fill. And that is, they have to get a running back now, but this running back class in the draft is pretty strong. And, you know, it's very clear with the Bills that Rex Ryan's trying to focus on some offense.
Well, the Eagles do have Darren Sproles, but he's not an
every down running back.
Right. And then, well, now they're paying Chris Polk a little more. Yeah, I mean, they do have kind of a void to fill, and I think they've shown some interest in Mark Ingram, I think it was. Yeah. But this is what this means for the Bills, obviously, is that the C.J. Spiller is on his way out, and so and he's been connected to the Jets, I think, pretty strongly in free agency. This pretty much guarantees that C.J. Spiller is basically out the door. So it'll be interesting to see, because Chan Gailey, I believe, is on the Jets staff, and he was the coach in Buffalo when C.J. Spiller had his best year in the league, I think, statistically and such. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes Shady is I don't know. I wouldn't say he struggled, really. He had well over 1,000 all-purpose yards last year. He played pretty well, but apparently he's making top shelf running back money, and apparently he wasn't worth that to Chip Kelly and the Eagles.
Well, a couple things. First off, the problem is last year's production went down because of Darren Sproles. Because beforehand, they didn't have a running back on third down that was, you know, as much of a threat as Darren Sproles is. Because Sproles is a lot, I think, is a different type of animal. That he's kind of more of a receiving threat than he is necessarily pound it down your throat in the trenches sort of running back. And that's kind of true of Shady, but it's like, it was hard to game plan for both of them, I think, was part of the problem. And I think seeing as how much his production kind of diminished, I think that they don't, I don't think the Eagles feel that he was the best option for that team. And maybe it's a scheme thing. There's a lot of things that go into it. And I think he'll be a good fit in Buffalo. I think Shady's one of the best running backs in the league. And I've thought that for a long time. And's one of the most exciting to watch. So that always is helpful. But I think the most interesting thing is it puts the Eagles in a bit of a bind, because looking at draft boards and things and like where it was projected, initially the rumor was that they might be going after Melvin Gordon type player, going after a running back in the first round of the draft. Might have been why they were doing this, is what I had heard the rumors to be. But now that seems to be going out the door, seeming to point that if Mariota falls past number one, that they might trade up to get Mariota instead of going after a running back in the first round. So it does put them in quite an interesting situation.
And JT, the Eagles, well, LeSean McCoy's production went down last year. But I think part of that is that their best lineman for a lot of the season was Lane Johnson. And they didn't. They were unhealthy on the offensive line. Go ahead, Kempson.
No, yeah, the offensive line struggled to stay healthy, and they struggled to have a consistent group of starters on their front line. Definitely, that didn't help with the injuries that they had to Nick Foles and such. That probably may have contributed to that. But slight correction on Kiko Alonso, he actually tore his knee up in training last July, and he was the defensive rookie of the year, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, stud linebacker. He's now paired with Michael Kendricks over at the Philadelphia Eagles, and so that'll be very interesting. So that'll be very interesting to see. See how they gel and see if they're able to become a top shelf linebacker duo. Right, exactly. I do agree with you about Shady McCoy being one of the best running backs in the NFL,
possibly the best.
Maybe. And the fact is, like, Fred Jackson is, he and Frank Gore are kind of the poster guys for longevity at the running back position at this point in the National Football League, and I love both of them. But, I mean, the fact is Fred Jackson is 34 and C.J. Spiller is basically gone, especially now. So this is a good move. It's a good move for the Bills, even though there is the Eagles get more cap space out of it. And as far as the money, the Bills take quite a hit as far as, like, the cap is concerned and everything. But as far as on the field – McCoy's probably, I think, worth it, because, I mean, weren't they going to have to pay something similar to C.J. Spiller to keep him? Probably. So, I mean, if you look at it that way, then this makes sense. And, it'll be very interesting to see if the Eagles trade on draft day to get up in the top 10 or top 5 even for Mariota and such. But a quarterback trade that did go down yesterday was Matt Cassel, again, to the Bills with a stampede of moves just before free agency opens up. Matt Cassel and a draft pick to the Bills from the Vikings, who are getting a couple of as yet undisclosed draft picks. All the draft picks are undisclosed as far as what they are.
Until probably next week.
Probably, yeah, exactly, yeah. When they actually finalize and go through next Tuesday. But, yeah, Matt Cassel is
solid.
Likely the quarterback for the Bills. And, he's a stopgap solution, but he's probably better than EJ Manuel.
I think this is, as far as this goes, it's not a bad solution to the problem, I think.
Especially when you got Shady at the mix.
Yeah, but the problem is that, I don't know, Rex Ryan's notoriously bad with quarterbacks,
But when he was first with the Jets, he had the ground and pound philosophy and such.
And
so
it worked.
Yeah, and if they do, they do need improvements along that offensive line. But if they make those and are able to have kind of the Jets approach, I mean, the Bills are I believe a quarterback away from being a very interesting team.
And, well, they're already a very good team, and the thing is, but they need a Matt Cassel. I don't think is the answer.
No, he's not the long term answer, certainly.
And I don't know, like, the problem, and this is the problem in the NFL anymore, is that it seems like you can't find a quarterback. Like, it seems relatively impossible. It's just
very tough, yes.
It's like, I mean, you get, you know, this coming out of the draft, it boils down to two options.
Mm-hmm.
Mariota and Jameis Winston.
And the rest are projects.
And even the two at the top are projects.
I would say Jameis is less of a project, but we've talked about this before.
I mean, but it begs the point here, though, that this has been the story since Andrew Luck. That
Andrew Luck was once in a generation.
I mean, it was a once in a generation prospect. I don't know if he's necessarily lived entirely up to the hype. Entirely. Not saying he's not a great QB, but I'm still not convinced that the once in a generation hype he's to that level yet.
Well, they need to build up the roster around
him. Right, I know. And I'm saying, but a lot of people see him as the second coming of like Peyton Manning, and I don't necessarily see it yet. Is he getting there?
More like John Elway.
Yeah, I mean, but it's just the thing is though, is that that's been the story for years. Has been the last couple of years in particular, is that everybody
that they need to improve the team around him, and yet he's still gone farther.
No. Let's just time out and back up.
Okay.
Let's not get into the whole what's wrong with the Colts thing.
Okay.
And get into what basically the point is though, is that every quarterback seems to be a project, and teams are just not willing to put the time into it.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's
a problem. The big problem is that you've got guys that probably could use a year or two on the bench. That don't get it, they get thrown in there. The mm-hmm. Blake Bortleses of the world and some other, you know, rookie QBs that...
Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah, Blaine Gabbert is one that...
He was ruined because of that.
I would argue Geno Smith was the same
way.
Yeah,
he had never taken a snap from under center in his entire college career, Blake Bortles. I mean, not Blake Bortles, but...
Gabbert, yeah.
Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah, and it was just... It's just tough. And teams need to slow down and take an approach that's going to let their players have some success. And the other thing is, I would argue you need to build a team around the QB before you draft a QB. I don't care if you're going to struggle at QB for a couple of years, you need to do something, because it's getting to the point where it's like, it's not even so much that the ownership's unwilling to do it. It's that the fans are unwilling to take a quarterback playing poorly, so then it falls on the ownership to try and appease the fans, it seems like, almost to an extent, too. Because it's like the fans are the impatient ones. So it's kind of... I mean, it goes a bit of both ways. But it is just that it's time that everybody slows down and sees everything as a process. And that's what the Bills have kind of done, is they've turned it into a process where they're getting better every year. And as soon as they get...
As long as they take the next steps from here, yeah.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I'm not saying Matt Castle couldn't be the quarterback that leads them to, you know, they could...
To the playoffs?
Well, I was going
to
say, they could go all the way. I mean, that team... I mean, they beat one of the best teams in the NFL last year when they beat the Packers, and they looked really good doing it.
At home, they are definitely very...
Well, no,
very good.
And I'm saying if they play that well at home the whole season and win some games on the road and get a home playoff game or two, you know...
I think they're more likely to be a wild card with New England in the same division.
Right, but the thing is, though, is that the case still stands, though, is that they have potential to be like that spoiler team.
I think the Bills are the closest of the long-suffering, like, playoff drought franchises to ending their drought at this point. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah, the Bills are, you know, their defense is really, really strong. And now they have Rex Ryan, one of the best defensive minds out there right now, coming and taking over the head coaching position that was previously vacated by Doug Marrone.
Right. And if the offense is like middling, I think they'll be a force as far as in the AFC playoff race next year. I'm not prepared to put them in the AFC playoffs at this particular moment, but they are certainly a team that could do a little more building, and I totally agree with you as far as needing to have more patience with the whole develop or actually attempting to develop a quarterback in today's day and age. at the NFL.
That division's becoming real right now because the Dolphins last year were contending for a playoff spot and they fell apart.
But now they have no wide receivers.
Yeah, their Dolphins are in trouble.
Yeah.
I think they need a new coach.
They have Jarvis Landry, but yeah.
But I guess let's transfer from talking about developing through getting a quarterback to developing through getting the rest of the free agents and talk a little bit about what's going on with the free agency. And we'll start with some franchise tags. Who and who wasn't franchise tagged?
Justin Houston for Kansas City, linebacker, almost broke the sack record last year, very quietly.
Mm-hmm.
Demaryius Thomas, stud wide receiver for the Denver Broncos, still hoping to get a long-term deal done with him. Obviously, the franchise tag is part of that, kind of a holdover part of that process. Dez Bryant, also same case with him, trying to get a long-term deal done with him in the future with the wide receiver
for
Dallas.
Of all of the people on this list, he might be the most shocking, other than maybe Steven Gostkowski, because who thinks that they're going to ever...
Yeah, I mean, they could have franchised McCourty, the safety.
That was a $13 million decision right there, gentlemen. Mm.
Jason Pierre-Paul, defensive end, and then a transition tag for Charles Clay, which means Clay can sign an offer sheet with any team he wants, but the Dolphins have the right to match that contract with Clay. And several big names did not get franchise tagged. Jordan Cameron, tight end for the Cleveland Browns, is good. Jerry Hughes, defensive lineman on the Buffalo Bills, we just talked about. Jeremy Maclin for the Philadelphia Eagles, most likely to hit the wide receiver market. Randall Cobb, I think, probably should stay with the Green Bay Packers as at wide
I think,
receiver.
Though, the problem is with Green Bay right now is they have too many people that need to get re-signed. Mm. And that's – they have a lot of – him, Bulaga, is up there. I think Raji's up there somewhere. I think they're working on getting a deal done with – there's a lot going on at this point with that team. And that it's just that type of year for the Packers, though, so it'll be interesting.
Talked a little bit about Devin McCourty, the safety for the Patriots. DeMarco Murray, Dallas Cowboys running back. Obviously, they tagged Bryant, so they couldn't tag Murray. And I think that Dallas at the running back position, if they're not going Adrian Peterson, should go like a Melvin Gordon type route in the draft. Julius Thomas at tight end for the Denver Broncos. Peyton Manning did take a $4 million pay cut, and he is returning to the Broncos officially. But and that may contribute to their ability to re-sign Julius Thomas and give him all his weapons
or
back.
Or get another tight end, like maybe Jordan Cameron.
Possibly. But the biggest name in all this, and probably the top free agent arguably on the market, Ndamukong Suh, Detroit Lion, is the Detroit Lions defensive tackle. He and J.J. Watt are absolute monsters on the defensive line and the top two, at least defensive linemen, in the league right now. But Sue is the one on that's going on the market when free agency opens up on March the 10th. Any thoughts on any of these names in particular?
Well, let's start with Ndamukong Suh because he's obviously the biggest name. I guess the big thing with him is that he's a guy that is going to command a J.J. Watt status contract.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's gonna want because he thinks he's that good of a player and is deserving of it. And I'm not disagreeing on how good he is as a player. I don't think I'd give him that big of a contract because there's too many problems with him on the field, like getting suspended, it seems like, at least once a year for doing something stupid. Like, absolutely stupid. But the other thing is like, he fits in with a lot of teams really well, but it's like, who can afford him? The big one, I guess, the front runner for him, it sounds like, is going to be the Miami Dolphins.
Mm.
Which, yeah. Him and Cameron Wake.
My goodness.
Everybody run.
Yeah. No, literally.
Literally, just run.
Yeah.
The other direction and quickly.
Yeah, and the other team that's come up is the Colts. And so that would be a very interesting way to try to build the team around Andrew Luck, like we just talked about. I mean, he's their franchise player, but if they think it's worth it to have their own, I guess, kind of J.J. Watt-type player on their defensive line to make other quarterbacks run, then, I mean, that makes sense.
I still think the Colts, I think their biggest thing is to take some pressure off Andrew Luck would be, I still want to see them get a good running back. really decent running back, because I think that would take a lot of the pressure off Andrew Luck.
Well, line as well would help.
Because he's running for his life, like, all the time, isn't he? Yeah. Yeah, and it's not good ever at all for him to just be on the run. So, but I think...
Well, he doesn't even need feet on the ground to throw on a frozen rope, so...
Yeah, it's true. He's got a good arm, and he's a good quarterback, but he needs some help around him. It's like, it's the same thing I say with Peyton Manning all the time, is like, calm down. He's one guy of a team of having...
Still a team game, yeah.
It's still the ultimate team game.
It's true.
You can't win with one player, usually.
There are 11 people on the field. He can't be responsible for 11 people at once. And 11 on the other side of the field. You can't win with just one player. Yeah.
I mean, player can make everybody. It's like what I call it, the LeBron James effect, just because it's what I'm a basketball guy, but it's the same concept. Like, he makes those around him better. And that's what you want in your quarterback, is to make everybody around him better. But the problem is that he can't do it all. And I think that's the unfair burden placed on QBs, is they're expected to do everything. So, and then I guess, other than Ndamukong Suh, the other big name, really, besides Julius Thomas, who I'm a little on the cautious end with Julius. I have been for most of his career in Denver in particular, just because he seemed to kind of come out of nowhere and was really, really, he was something special, but a lot of that is, you know, like I said, like it's he had Peyton Manning around, who makes those around him better.
Makes Jacob Tammy into a Pro Bowl talent.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know how much of a gamble other teams are going to be willing to take on him. And then there's obviously Randall Cobb, who, I don't know what's going to happen with him.
Yeah.
I think,
like I said, I think he should stay. I think that's the best possible situation he can have. And whatever contract he gets in a few years, I mean, then he can, if he wants to get paid elsewhere or whatever, maybe he has another ring at that point and he just wants to get paid or something. Like, that's fine. But, I mean, is there a better – he's not going to upgrade his situation. He's going to upgrade his role maybe, but he's not going to upgrade his situation. I mean, he has Aaron Rodgers, who is the top quarterback arguably in the National Football League, and he has a great chemistry with him. It's him and it's Rodgers and Cobb and Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. When the play breaks down, those are like the top two dynamic duos as far as making something out of nothing.
I beg to differ.
All right, well, who
Rodgers
else?
And Jordy.
Oh, right. But that's what I'm – I know. Jordy's the number one, though.
Oh.
And Cobb is the number two. And Cobb – he looks to Cobb when the play breaks down more often than not, is what I'm saying. Like,
well,
when the play
breaks
down.
True. That's true. But I generally consider Antonio Brown to be a number one option.
Yeah, yeah. But so Jordy – yeah, exactly. And Jordy is the number one in Green Bay.
Okay. I get what you're saying. So, yeah, Randall Cobb. The thing I think with him is what – well, the thing is with the Packers is they have a lot of free agents, like a lot. Like Tremont Williams is up there. Brian Bulaga's up there. B.J. Raji's up there. So who knows what's going to happen with Randall Cobb. Because
I'm a little bit hesitant about B.J. Raji considering his torn bicep injury that he suffered in preseason. And 2013, he didn't have that good of a season. So there's a little bit of hesitancy there.
Is he over the hill?
Another guy that I'd like to bring up is Byron Maxwell and Torrey Smith. Both guys pretty solid.
Byron Maxwell is probably the top corner on the market. And then Torrey Smith is probably – he's better than Mike Wallace and as the Dolphins executive – or not the Dolphins, the Ravens Ravens owner, I think it was, addressed a week or two ago. About that contract, but I don't think anybody would really disagree with that, the fact that that was a bad decision for the Dolphins to bring in Mike Wallace for what they brought him in for. But yeah, Torrey Smith is probably going to get paid, and it'll depend on where he ends up as far as what I expect out of him.
Yep.
Yep.
And Yeah, but then the Mike Wallace thing that you brought up is another example of the fans being impatient. They wanted him signed for a big contract.
Well, his contract's up, so and he didn't sign an extension. So behind Torrey Smith, Macklin. See, like, and he could go to Kansas City, be reunited with Andy Reid, and probably catch touchdowns for the Chiefs, and the Chiefs would have a wide receiver with a touchdown.
the world is going to stop turning when that happens.
Yeah, what about this? The Chiefs, like, you want to know how long this last section of the NFL calendar was between, like, the combine and actual stuff happening in free agency? The Chiefs cut pretty much everybody who hadn't caught touchdown passes for them, but then they started cutting people who had, Anthony Fasano namely, and they might cut Dwayne Bowe now, which is understandable because he's never lived up to the number one wide receiver hype, really. He had one really good season, but at any rate, anything else to say on the top free agents in the National Football League?
I don't really have anything else. We'll know more as it starts to play out and what tends to happen with people. It's too much speculation right now on what's going to happen, especially with some of the guys. There's just too much going on around them that's going to make it really tough. But so then let's kind of move away from free agents, move on to UFC 184, which happened over the weekend. Who besides me watched it?
Well, I didn't watch it, but
I don't have pay-per-view.
I think our review is going to be a little longer than the Rousey's and Gano bout.
Is that a challenge?
Oh, no. I mean, no, but...
I mean, I could go into old-school debate mode and just try and talk as fast as I could. I mean, if you really wanted me to, but I probably
would. So let's start with the main event and just go with kind of what stood out to you on the card.
Rousey defeats Ngannou by an armbar in 14 seconds. There, that's your entire overview of what happened and everything that was remotely important.
Really? All right. Nothing else.
That was less than 14
you?
Seconds.
I know. I wasn't. Okay. That wasn't a challenge.
it was a fluke.
Oh,
we'll put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Anybody that's seen the video would know that that's. That's never going to happen again between those two.
I've seen pictures.
I made
For
a
some
joke.
Reason I couldn't find video of it.
I made a joke between me and my brother. I said they might have to start putting Ronda Rousey pay-per-views on Instagram
or Vine
meme. But like,
yeah, in a GIF.
Like, Kat Zingano went straight Chael Sonnen, YOLO. I mean, except she threw a flying knee instead of a spinning back fist.
Straight Diego Sanchez.
She wants a she wants a rematch. And
Ronda told her she
totally
could have
willing,
it.
Yeah.
Because that's a fluke if I've ever seen it. And Ronda gets it. Because Ronda's like, I mean,
she deserves a rematch. That's what she said.
Yeah, well, yeah. And she's that good. Mm-hmm. But I have a feeling Kat is going to have to beat somebody. Ronda's going to be on the shelf for a while. She's filming another movie. We know that.
Yep.
She confirmed that after the fight. So Ronda needs to fight Kat again for straight legacy purposes because that'll be the forever. Well, she fought Kat and beat her off of a fluke. Mm. You know,
just leave no doubt kind of thing.
Yeah, you need to leave no doubt because, like, this is a thing we always talked about when I was doing jiu-jitsu and stuff, when I was still doing taekwondo. It was like, the one thing they always told us is if you get caught, everybody gets caught, and that's kind of what happened. Hmm. Kat got caught. And that's all that happened. You know, if that fight would have gone on a little longer and Rousey would have probably picked her apart on the feet, I legitimately think that because Rousey's hands are incredible.
Right.
Is that – and then submitted her, it would have been different. But I don't think there was – I think the one punch that was thrown that whole fight was a knee. Or the one strike that was thrown was a knee, and that
yeah,
was it.
Yeah, she sprinted across the cage with the intention of trying to knock Ronda's head off at the opening bell.
Well, the...
Good luck.
Well, the thing was is it had nothing to do with knocking Ronda's head off. It had to do with she wanted to catch her off guard.
Yeah.
Because nobody had ever done that to Ronda before. Because I had...
That's something that Ronda talked about
after
the
fight.
Yeah.
Well, I had been watching... Like, I went back and watched some of Ronda's fights and stuff and found them on the internet and watched a couple of them, and that was... The one thing I noticed is that nobody really tried to pressure her. I mean, Alexis Davis did kind of, but they touched gloves and then started throwing. And so it wasn't like this whole, like, right out the, you know, dead sprint, I'm chasing you, I'm gunning for you, you know, to put her in shock. And Ronda was completely prepared for it. So it just didn't, that strategy did not work.
Handled it like a champ?
Yeah, kind of, to an extent. But I think there will be a rematch to this, I have a feeling. I don't know if it's going to be before or after this alleged... The rumor is right now that Ronda's going to be on the shelf for a while because of the movie. We know that's a fact. Right. Cyborg is scheduled to fight at 145 in July. Mm-hmm. Cyborg is a relatively famous Brazilian ladies MMA fighter who is widely considered to be... It's like Ronda, her, and Kat are like the top three.
So do we want to go same division?
Okay, so the problem is here is that Cyborg fights at 145 instead of 135. Ronda fights at 135 and holds a belt. They don't want to have Cyborg fight Ronda unless it's for a belt. Uh-huh. Is the rumor anyway.
Okay.
And so what they're going to do is Cyborg is starting to cut weight to try and make it down to 135. And so she'll be roughly there before the fight. So when she cuts weight, actually does the weight cut itself, it's not going to harm her body. A lot like what happened to Henin Barão.
Right.
Like pass out, like can't make that weight health, in a healthy way.
Yeah.
So they're gonna try and get her down and get her to be the next opponent for Ronda. If that doesn't happen, I think it'll be Kat again. Either that or Correa, because that they've actually, I guess, talked about that has a storyline and Ronda wants to knock her head off. So that could be also the next fight. But that is probably, I would guess, at least 6 months off. So we'll see what's happening at that point. In other women's bantamweight news, Holly Holm defeats Raquel Pennington by split decision. The one actual decision on the main card. There were only three decisions on the whole thing. Two of them in the prelims, one in the main card. So it's pretty great. This fight was interesting. I actually thought Raquel might come away with it. It was a decently close fight. Holly Holm looked pretty good, though. She's a world famous like kickboxer. Never really done MMA. It was her UFC debut on the co-main event of a UFC card.
Dang.
And she comes in and wins. It was an okay fight. Wasn't super exciting, but it was awesome. Holly Holm, I think, could maybe be a force to be reckoned with. She's got great striking, great kicks, other than her side kicks need work. And I know this because I did Taekwondo for a long time. She's trying to push too much and instead of trying to snap it. But she's good. So she's one to keep your eye on. And then Jake Ellenberger choked out Josh Koscheck in spectacular fashion. He started choking him out, and Koscheck tried to roll out and was fighting like a pit bull, just trying to get out, and was actually Koscheck was foaming at the mouth before he tapped. There's pictures of it floating around on the internet. It's disgusting.
Wow.
But that choke was deep. And then Alan Jouban defeats Richard Walsh with a really nasty elbow. Just he like grabbed his head and pulled it in and caught him with an elbow.
Oof.
And
the former male model's got some game.
Yeah, he's really good. I've watched him fight a couple of times now, and I'm always impressed. And gnarly knockout happened in the first round, was really awesome. And then Tony Ferguson defeated Gleison Tibau by rear naked choke, and that was pretty impressive. So that was kind of the main card. The only other fight that on the undercard, besides Mark Munoz got choked out, that was kind of also one of the Mark Munoz just kind of got caught sort of things. And I don't know what's next for Mark Munoz. Might be retirement coming for him, but I'm not sure. But Tim Means defeated Diego Lima with a pretty – picked him apart and knocked him out, and that was super impressive. So, but
Tim Means was on the Ultimate Fighter the same season as him, right?
Might have been. Tim Means is impressive, though. I like him. He's a good fighter, and he's got a bright future ahead of him. So it was quite interesting. It's just, I don't know. He's impressive. Mm. But let's transition away from UFC. We'll transition away from UFC and talking about all the action there to talking about the college basketball action with Kentucky barely remaining unbeaten with its victory over Georgia. They're now 30-0 and looking to move into the SEC tournament where they have one more game left. And then they have six games in the SEC tournament, and then three games in the SEC tournament, six games in the actual tournament, and they could go undefeated, leaving them at 40-0.
Yep.
So it's impressive. We're moving into conference tournaments, start either this weekend or early next week, some of them, because I know Kentucky's last regular season game's on Saturday. So it's going to be an interesting week next week. Going to be a lot of great basketball going on.
I caught the second half of the Kentucky-Georgia game on Tuesday night. And Georgia, the way Georgia plays, a lot of people have been, and we've talked about this, have been talking about them being, at least down the stretch, the team that was probably most likely to end the pursuit of perfection for the Kentucky Wildcats. And for a time, in about midway through the second half, it looked like it might become reality. On the Dog senior night, they had that place rocking as they were up by several points, including the aforementioned J.J. Frazier miracle shot that had his coach probably saying, no, 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 yes, as soon as it went in the bucket. And they do host Florida for their final regular season game. And then they go forward into their conference tournament, which all teams are at this point, pretty much wrapping up the regular season. And then we will have, after the conference tournaments are all said and done, we'll have Selection Sunday, which they will officially set the brackets, including all the play-in games and everything. And then we'll make our brackets and have at it right after that. But for now, that's pretty much our college basketball contribution. But we're getting right down to the home stretch into the height of March Madness and all the fun that comes with that. And speaking of fun, here's the transition you've been waiting for.
Yeah, we're going to transition now into the NBA, and we're going to talk about a little team that likely in a couple months will not be hoisting a certain NBA championship trophy. Duh, Bulls. Jimmy Butler's out up to 6 weeks with a knee injury. Mm-hmm. He'll be back probably before the playoffs. I'm pretty sure that's the indication that he should be back before the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think, which is good. They're going to need him if they're going to make a playoff push. And Derrick Rose should be back, it sounds like, at that point.
Should he be back?
Should Derrick Rose be back? Mm-hmm. Should Derrick Rose ever come back? That's really the question. At this point, Derrick Rose needs to probably take a long, hard look at his career.
Yep.
And try and figure out what he needs to do. But
I don't think he should come back for the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think so either, but I disagree. He had that meniscus removed, it sounds like, instead of which he should not have done. But in my opinion, but I'm not Derrick Rose and I'm not his doctor, so what do I know? I'm just a guy that talks a lot and pretends to know a lot. So, but I mean, that's unfortunate for the Bulls. It's a super unfortunate turn for the worse.
Yeah.
They still have Powell. They still have Joakim. Mm-hmm. They've still got,
they're still going to make the playoffs.
I mean, they're in the East,
right?
You can be utterly horrendous and still make the playoffs in the East.
The Hawks have already clinched.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They were the first team to clinch this week. That's true.
I mean, I'm not shocked. I don't know if that doesn't mean a lot to me, though. I don't think they're going to. I don't know if they have the power to stop a Cleveland or a Chicago, especially Cleveland. Cleveland's just firing on all cylinders. And I think had the game that Cleveland lost to the Rockets, had what should have happened happen and James Harden gotten ejected, For kicking LeBron in the groin.
Mm. And suspended for...
Yeah, he got suspended for it. He should have gotten ejected from the game, too.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
He should have been, and that was ridiculous. But...
he at least got technical, though, right?
He got a technical, but the problem was is that LeBron went into LeBron kill mode and was trying to play 1v5 basketball and then missed a couple free throws that cost Cleveland the game. But the fact of the matter is James Harden should have been ejected, and that is all there is to it. So because I think that's ridiculous. Like, it really is. And I think if that hadn't – and I'm not saying that Cleveland without that groin kick and that little scuffle between Patrick Beverley and LeBron, that it would have – LeBron, something happened with him that caused him to go into one-man basketball mode. And had it not been for that, I think Cleveland would have won. Mm. Not making excuses for them, but I'm just saying that I think Cleveland right now is the team to beat.
Yep.
In either conference. Their defense is incredible. Atlanta's too much of a shooting team, which is a problem that I see, is that they rely too much on shooting. Like, that's their big thing, is you always hear that, well, they're high-percentage shooters. They have great big men. Al Jefferson and Paul Millsap – or not Al Jefferson, Al Horford.
Al Horford.
And they're both Al's, okay? Don't judge me. And Paul Millsap are both really impressive. So they're an all-around good team. I just don't think they have it to the athleticism and the defensive prowess to take down Cleveland.
Anybody going to – well, they play on, I think it's Sunday night. So
yeah,
we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. And Kyrie is back and he's healthy, so we'll see. But we'll turn away from the Bulls and look to another unfortunate situation.
Sorry. Tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be a good game. To another stupidly unfortunate situation, the Nuggets fire Brian Shaw. I'm not shocked, but that team's given up. Like, that team gave up a long time ago. They – in I'm not going to make excuses for this coach because I don't know Brian Shaw. I've never met him. I don't know him as a human being. But the impression I get from a lot of people is a lot of people really like him. Hmm. That he's still a pretty – he's a Phil Jackson prodigy type of person.
Disciple.
Or yeah, disciple, yeah. Yeah. And he kind of got an unfair shake that the Nuggets were really good and then he showed up and they got really bad. And a lot of people don't necessarily attribute that to – him being a bad coach. It has to do with the players are pissed they fired George Karl, because George Karl wins coach of the year after they make the playoffs and they fire him. That's like,
oh, I remember that now.
It's,
yeah,
what the Warriors did to
that made
to
no
Mark
sense
Jackson.
To me. Yeah, same, he was Mark Jackson before Mark Jackson was Mark
Jackson.
Jackson.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's,
forgot about that.
And they were pissed. And apparently Ty Lawson and like Kenneth Faried and some of those guys just didn't want to play for him.
Hmm.
They were pissed.
Hmm.
And they came out a couple days ago and last week and broke a huddle saying 1, 2, 3, 6 weeks, which means to the end of the season.
Oof.
It's like, and everybody's, and Brian Shaw had been saying for weeks or for months about how immature that locker room is.
Hmm.
And normally I don't believe a coach when he says blames the locker room, but when they do something like that,
that's,
I'm not necessarily, especially with how talented, about how talented that team should be. And then to another team that's on, or two teams really that are in free fall, the Wizards have dropped 8 of their last 9 games since the All-Star break. I don't know what's going on with them, but they suck. They're missing wide open shots. John Wall suddenly can't shoot the ball.
Wow.
It's just – that whole team just took a crap out of nowhere.
It's time to hit the eject button, as they say.
They're still going to make the playoffs, which is more than we can say.
Barring utterly epic collapse, right. They are not going to – which would be one of the most epic collapses in sports.
Yeah.
It would be insanity.
Well, yeah.
We'd be talking about 20 years from now, that kind of collapse.
Yeah,
the – but Washington is way more than likely going to make the playoffs. The Suns are more than likely going to be left out of the playoffs.
It's their own fault.
And their free fall. Well,
it's their own fault. Like, you can't get rid of two of your best three players.
Oh, they're already out of the playoffs.
No, they can make the playoffs.
Well, I know, but they're out. Like, last time I looked at the standings, OKC
was out. Yeah, they're about 3
out,
games down on OKC. Yeah.
Well, OKC almost lost to the 76ers last night. Anything can happen at this point. But I think Phoenix can make it.
Including Russell Westbrook winning the MVP.
We'll get to that in a minute. So anybody that didn't believe me when I said Russell Westbrook's a franchise player and that...
I didn't say nothing.
I know that...
I didn't either.
Notice that double negative.
Yeah. That... that says that Russell Westbrook's not a franchise player and didn't believe me when I said I want to build a team around him. Here's your proof.
Come at him on Twitter, people.
Four triple dubs in a row. Four. That's a
go at him like Kat Zingano went at Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, that'll go well.
Because it'll end badly for you.
That was good. I like that.
But it was just – he's incredible. Mm. And, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with the Suns. The Thunder, I think, might – are slowly becoming the favorites in the West, though, in my mind.
Wow.
Because the way I see it, though, is that...
See, what about Houston?
I've never been on the Houston bandwagon.
Okay.
I think their problems are going to get... I think they're going to get worse in about 4 weeks when Dwight Howard comes back.
Oh.
Because I think they're going to have to readjust playing with their big man, big softy over there. and I don't know what's going to happen. I think I think OKC, if Westbrook keeps playing like this, when Durant gets back, whew, look out. You better look out because Westbrook is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
He's possessed. Mm-hmm. He's playing like a man possessed, which is how he always plays. It's just that something has gotten him to play at a crazy level. He's playing better than anybody else in the NBA right now.
There's not going to be a similar adjustment to what Houston will have to deal with Durant coming back to OKC.
Durant hasn't been out as long as...
Oh, okay.
Dwight Howard's been out like 15 or more games and it's just been gone. And
so who's the favorite in the West at this point? Because you said Cleveland is the favorite. Maybe
it's either OKC or Golden State.
Right. And they play each other in the first round at this point.
So far. OKC is going to pass San Antonio.
Okay.
I think. Absolutely. I think that'll happen without a doubt. They're only three games back. Three and a half games back.
I'm just saying, like, as it stands right now, if the season ended today, that would be really interesting.
Yeah. That would actually be more of an NBA Finals matchup. Actually, I disagree. Oklahoma City versus Cleveland would be a war.
Yeah.
That'd be like an NBA Finals for the ages. Mm. And that's what I want to see. I'm not what I would call a Thunder fan at all. I'm a Russell Westbrook fan, and I went to high school with a guy that got drafted by OKC in the first round last year, Josh Huestis. Mm-hmm. And so I have a little bit of stake in OKC, but I just want to see that happen. OKC Cleveland for the title. Westbrook versus LeBron. And I'm only putting those two together because those two are infinitely more athletic than Kevin Durant is in terms of just being explosive and just being crazy fun to watch. Mm. Like, I like Kevin Durant. I think he's a better player than Russell Westbrook, but there's a difference between why I want to see that series happen. And that just comes down to sheer amounts of explosiveness. I want to see Russell Westbrook D up on LeBron and LeBron D up on Russell Westbrook.
That would be a lot of fun.
It would be awesome to watch.
The Splash Brothers, I would have no problem with them going at least to the finals and taking their best shot, pun intended, at an NBA title. But yeah, that
LeBron would
be would
just
really
D
interesting.
Up on Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. I don't think
there's see that would be fun to watch too, though.
I think. Well, actually, I take that back. They might stick Kyrie on Steph, or they might stick LeBron on Steph and Kyrie on Klay Thompson. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Could be an interesting series.
All right.
But I guess let's transfer to our final little transition to our final little topic for the day. The NBA MVP picking our top three candidates. I'm going to let you two go first.
Brandon, you're up.
All right, guys. How about a guy we just talked about, Steph Curry, then another guy we just talked about, LeBron James, and then another guy we just talked about, Russell Westbrook.
What's your order?
I would put, I don't know, man. That's how many games did LeBron miss?
He missed a lot, but not that. He's missed like seven. It hasn't been.
Okay.
It's around. Let's just say it's around 10.
Okay.
Around 10. Yeah.
Huh. Well, I would have to say my current MVP pick would have to be. God, this is tough. Drum roll, please. LeBron James.
Okay, why?
Because he's the king,
LeBron
baby.
James.
Okay. Campson.
I wish I'd prepared more for this, but I would say James Harden was getting talked up a lot as a prime MVP candidate. Well, is getting talked up a lot as a prime MVP candidate, so he's definitely in my top three. And then it probably is Curry and James. Not to leave Russell Westbrook out in the cold, but when Durant comes back, like you addressed last week, they have to feed off of each other, and that kind of can be a symbiotic relationship in a way, just that like it's not that they're bad for each other necessarily, but it's just that Westbrook may not have the chance to be as explosive as the four straight triple doubles have been. So
the record tying.
Go ahead, Brandon.
The Michael Jordan record tying Russell Westbrook, as he will now be known.
Yeah, I
possibly record breaking. I mean, I
wouldn't be shocked if he breaks it because that's just how he is. I wouldn't be shocked. Here's my point.
Just think about this. Here's the numbers here.
Oh my god.
Kobe Bryant has 21 career triple doubles. Russell Westbrook has scored four in a row.
OKC plays at Chicago tonight.
Yeah, I know.
To break Michael Jordan's record for triple doubles.
Are they
going to
do
it?
Is he
going to
do it? I don't think he will.
Wow.
I don't think he's going to do it because of how.
That's just a great story. Like, just everything else aside, That's a great story.
I think he's going to get a double-double and be like one rebound or something short. I think it's going to come close because I don't think he's going to be out-rebounding Joakim and Pau Gasol.
No, probably not, but wow. That could be great.
But then again, Russell Westbrook might be the most athletic player in the NBA.
He's got a mask now.
Yeah.
Well, so he's a superhero.
Russell Westbrook is like Derrick Rose from a couple years ago. Mm. Like pre-injury Derrick Rose. Is Russell Westbrook, except Russell Westbrook might be better, which is scary to think about.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, continue.
Did I say who my leader was?
You picked, I think it was Curry, Harden, and LeBron.
You said James Harden.
I said Harden, Curry, and LeBron.
Who's your number one?
Drum roll?
I don't really need a drum roll, but... Curry.
Okay, why?
Because... Golden State is... No, wait. I might have to go with Harden, actually. Because Harden... we've talked about this before. Harden's game has always been, like, almost completely offense. Or maybe completely offense. And since he learned how to play defense, he was... For you, in your book, when he learned how to play defense, he was at least one of the leading MVP candidates in the league. And so... I mean, I know there's the whole story about how LeBron came home and everything, and it would be great for him to win the MVP there and everything in his first deal home or first season home. I say he'll get like NBA Finals MVP. How about that? And James Harden will win league MVP, and then Steph Curry, I don't know, Western Conference Finals MVP.
Which is not a price that they actually give out.
I know.
Okay.
I think they...
No, they don't.
Okay.
All right. So, you ready?
All right, yeah. I'm ready to get just... Okay. ...baptized.
So, we're going to look at it this way. Okay. I'm going to give you my three picks, and we're going to go down through an order, and we're going to go through why. So, right now, Russell Westbrook... Steph Curry, LeBron James.
That's the order?
Not in that order.
Oh, okay.
Those are the three.
Those are the three.
We're going to start with Russell Westbrook, and we're going to talk about why I'm on the Russell Westbrook train. Mm-hmm. Leading the league in points right now, he's averaging 27 a game. He's actually 0.1 above James Harden at this point. Yeah. The thing is that I'm seeing here with Russell is his game has elevated to a level that I think is MVP quality, because the second best player in the league is gone on his team right now. He's hurt. Mm-hmm. Russell Westbrook's turned into a monstrosity, just a straight monster. What do you do? How do you stop him? You don't. Like, you can't stop Russell Westbrook. Like, you can try, and you're still not going to do it. At this point, his pace is incredible. Like, he's on a historic pace right now in terms of getting triple-doubles and doing all these other things. But if you look, it's the same thing that happened last year with Kevin Durant. Russell Westbrook got hurt, and guess what happens? KD wins an MVP because KD turns into an MVP quality.
But KD is about to come back.
Right, but the thing was is they were without Russell for a good part of last year.
Right.
So you have to, when you're missing parts of your team, you have to elevate yourself to make up for it, which is what Russell Westbrook's doing. Contrast that with James Harden, whose numbers have been fairly consistent with or without Dwight Howard, who I would argue is actually probably the best player on their team. Because
Howard is better than
Harden, yes. Okay. I believe that firmly, for the reasons that I think having a big, like, the best center in the league is better than having, like, the third or fourth best shooting guard in the league. Mm-hmm. And I say that slightly facetiously because I would almost argue he might be. I mean, he's up there. He might actually be the best shooting guard in the league. Like, well, he might be. But I said it slightly facetiously because Russell Westbrook is almost shooting guard status. But he's averaging point guard assists right now. He's fourth in assists per game. So
the other thing is, since Harden's antics with the LeBron thing that we talked about earlier, I don't know. That's not really MVP quality. Well, so
morals don't factor into it. It's on the court production, because if you want to talk about that, LeBron would never win an MVP because he flops all the time and yells at the refs and gets pissed off and does stuff that people don't consider to be MVP-like.
Oh.
He just does it because he can, and that's what basketball players do.
Well, and like you said, Harden tries to influence.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing is that if you look at it,
so
Harden at this point is averaging – they did this on NBA Coast to Coast the other night. Harden has more free throw attempts than the rest of their team combined.
Mm.
That is a stat that tells me if the refs stop calling fouls on you, you're in trouble when you're averaging that many – when you're getting that many attempts at the line.
All right, I'll go with Curry then. That's my top pick.
Right. I mean, it's just the way
you've talked me out of Harden, and it wasn't really that hard, because I wanted to go with Curry anyway, yeah. Just because I like Curry, because he's got he's the best, arguably the best shooter in the game.
He's the best
shooter in the game.
If he retired right now, and his stats continue to be the best shooter in NBA history.
All
right.
So there you go.
Unless maybe Kyle Korver right now, who's on the historic pace for 50, 50, and 90.
Yeah, but he's not going to be MVP.
No.
Curry is.
I know, but
so Korver. I would go with Curry, and you talked me out of Harden, so I don't even want to address Harden. But LeBron has missed too much time, I would say. I mean, that would be kind of my argument. And also, like I said, I would say that I'll pick him right now to be NBA Finals MVP.
I think – all right, so – I'm going to move on from Russell, and then we'll talk about Steph.
Okay.
Steph's leading the league in steals right now, which is really impressive.
2.3 per game.
Yep, 2.12 actually as of right now, which is impressive. And he's fifth in points. He's nowhere to be found on the assist list in the top five. I don't know where he is. I'm actually going to pull it up here. He isn't even in the top 10. So that's actually a problem with me. But the thing with Steph Curry right now is he's leading the league's best team. He's an animal. He's doing a lot of things that I think he's flashy. He's doing things that people are just absolutely
in love with.
Yeah, like there's this Steph Curry mystique that's going on. I think the things that he's doing defensively, offensively, he's making guys look bad. He's making guys look like fourth graders out there, like just dribbling around and making him look bad. He might not score every time, but
he put Kyrie Irving on skates.
And you know what's funny is he was doing that in fourth grade.
Yeah. he's just bad. I mean, by bad, he's one bad man. He's going to make you look bad. And it's just, oh, he's number six on the assist list. I just missed his name. I somehow just misread over it. But he's doing well.
The cursor is on. Oh, no, that's a thing. Never mind.
Yeah, I missaw it. But he's doing pretty well. And I think his shooting percentage, especially from the three-pointers and stuff, elevate him up there. And plus this mystique that's around him, especially being on the league's best team and being the leader, is going to really help him. It's not enough to win it for me, but he's up there. And then comes LeBron James, who has been putting up 30-point games left and right, just taking over and is elevating the Cleveland Cavaliers to championship-level basketball. And that's what's scary is now LeBron is moving the ball around. He's getting guys in a position. He's scoring a lot. He's playing great defense, which is what LeBron does. That's elevating him. So it really comes down to either Russell Westbrook or LeBron James for me. And right now, I'm going to say Russell Westbrook is my pick to win it. Because I think if even when KD comes back, it's going to be it's going to be the Russell Westbrook show the rest of the season. I think he's on a tear, and I think that's basically going to be the end of the story, is that he's going to continue. He's not going to maybe hit a bunch more straight triple-doubles. He's going to just keep putting up numbers, and it's going to be impressive. And if he keeps leading the league in points, I think he will have hit that number enough to warrant winning an MVP. But we'll see what happens. But anyway, I think that's all we've got for the news this week and in anything important. With that,
hit us up on Twitter. We would appreciate your feedback. Download and subscribe. We're on iTunes. Podomatic is our backup to our feed for that. And Facebook. We're also on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. We are the Championship Sportscast. This is us. We're going to sign off for this week. I mean, Brandon, do you have anything else to add?
Really? Just enjoy yourself.
This has been the Championship Sportscast, and y'all come back.
Thanks for listening, everyone.